entscheide mich natürlich, hörst du, sind wir jetzt drauf wieder? So.
Ich mache mal eine Pause, alles klar.
Ja, ich entscheide mich natürlich für mich, also ich möchte mich natürlich hören. So, so we listen to your music now, but of course, this is just like one topic. The other topic is election day. So, you know, we try to get some, you know, really try hard stuff to get some political analysts and, you know, like... diplomats, news anchorman, and so on. And now we ended up with you. And you, do, like last time I met, you said, "Okay, I'm gonna vote for Modi, BJP." And now you said you're gonna vote, or you voted for AAP, right? Yeah. This is so. What is this AAP? Explain the AAP to us.
The conditions. Okay, so basically. Okay, at the point when we had the last discussion, we had only two options at that point, which was either BJP or the Congress. Now, the Congress had a candidate who they're fielding called Rahul Gandhi, who's an absolute idiot.
Like, but he looked so nice.
I mean, luckily the world doesn't work that way, but like, he is one of the biggest idiots to have ever, like, been... arrived on the political scene. It's insane. Like, the speeches he gives are so stupid. You should actually share some videos of him talking with some people. It's mind-boggling. Anyway, and then we had Modi. Now, like, obviously Modi has his past, but the question was, who are you going to vote for? Are you going to vote for an absolute idiot at a time when India is completely clueless and India is completely frozen decision-wise? Are you going to take a chance with this guy? So at that point I was definitely going to vote for Modi, but the situation has changed since then. And then what happened is, basically there was an anti-corruption movement which happened in India, which started 2 years ago, and that transformed into a party which is now called the Aam Aadmi Party, which means the Common Man Party. Literally translated. And the leader of this party is like a guy called Arvind Kejriwal. The guy talks a lot. It's insane how much he talks. But I wouldn't even call him charismatic, but I'd say he's earnest. So like, when we hear him talk, or the things he's done or claims to have done, he's still got a very like down to earth. He's pretty blunt, which is what he's not like tying it up in like some poetry or like some stupid metaphors. He's straight up, this is what I want to do, this is what we can do, this is what we're capable of doing, this is what we think we'll do, what we promise we do. And I mean, so the craziest thing happened this year was that Delhi, the capital of India, had its elections for like the
municipal elections.
Yeah, exactly, for the state elections.
Yeah.
And Congress had ruled that state for the last 10 plus years, right? And somehow, in these elections, Congress completely got routed. So they had an absolute minority. They had no chance. The BJP got the largest number of seats, but not enough seats to field a majority government. And so they wanted new elections. But the Aam Aadmi Party got the second highest number of votes. So a twist happened where the Congress supported the Aam Aadmi Party, and suddenly we had a majority, or we had like a new government, which is consisting of the Aam Aadmi Party with the Congress allied with it, which is incredible. So the Aam Aadmi Party basically came into power, and like, they lasted only 49 days. Because after the 49th day, basically, like... each day was like an absolute circus while they were in power.
Okay.
And like, it was insane, because every day they were claiming to do something, and they were trying to do changes really rapidly, and some real idiots were also coming out of the party, and they were getting like displayed and then punished and not punished. But the point was, it was an absolute circus for 49 days, and it completely like changed the like political landscape of India.
So what... give an example of what they did.
Okay, so this is what they claim to do is, they made a list of the things they did. Firstly, like, the first thing they tried to do was reduce the prices of water and electricity by almost half immediately. That's all populist movements, you know, all populist like motives. And then the other thing they tried to do was, a simple thing they tried to do was basically convert a lot of like buses into homeless shelters. Mm-hmm. Like immediately, like from day two, they were like, because there were so many empty buses, unused buses in Delhi, like insane amounts, and they slowly started converting these into.
Why are these old buses in the streets? They're
not in the streets. They're like parked.
Oh, okay.
Inside like some municipal buildings and stuff.
And they turned this it for homeless.
They were started
homeless.
Turning this into like homeless shelter because it was winter time. In Delhi, it's like it'll kill you. Like people die in the winter all the time. It gets as cold as Berlin. Until it starts snowing, if you know what
I mean.
It gets really cold.
Like, yes, yes.
It gets frigid. And it's cold enough to die in, basically, if you're outside and you don't have shelter. And that's one of the things they try to do. And then the other interesting thing they really did is they started fighting.
Mm-hmm.
They started fighting with all the major like corporations which pretty much run so many of the important utilities. Like there's a company called Reliance in India. Reliance is basically the biggest company in India. It's a major conglomerate. So it runs electricity, oil, plastics, you know, all sorts of products. Like
so is it a private company?
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely.
Okay.
It's a Gujarati company, and basically, what happened at the end of his term, which was just 49 days, is. He's smart. He was very media savvy. So on like the 40th or 35th day, basically, he said that he basically opened a case against Reliance.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wanted to say that Reliance is forcing the gas prices up and all these things.
Monopolistic.
Yeah, exactly. All this stuff. And basically, as that started happening, BJP and Congress started panicking because they have a relationship with the Reliance.
Okay.
And Congress basically said that they're going to drop out of the coalition, which would end the government. So prior to that, the Aam Aadmi Party, the governor resigned himself before that could even happen. So obviously what's happened now is that people have two impressions. A, the first impression is that he ran away from his job.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that's not what he was trying to achieve. He was trying to achieve, like, he was saying that, listen, I've given up power because the right thing wasn't going to happen. They were going to, like, sacrifice me, whatever. So I just gave up power. And that's itself sort of a brave thing to do. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, we don't know. Anyway, the thing is, he came out and he did these things. And, like, it's radically different from what Indian politicians have usually been. Like, no, I can't think of an Indian politician who gave up power voluntarily.
Yeah.
Till in our, like, all the, which is just, like, 70 years old.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you can't. So today... elections will take place in what you call a constituency of Varanasi, right?
Yeah.
So
city of Varanasi, yeah.
So there is Modi has turned out to be the candidate of in Varanasi.
He's running from two places.
He's running from two places.
Yeah.
How can he do that?
Well, you can run for two places.
Okay. Because and then his opponent is what's the name? The guy's name again?
Kejriwal. Yeah.
And I remember when I did some research. So Modi went to Varanasi, and he said, "The people have not sent me here, but Mother Ganga, Mother Ganga. So the goddess Ganga says we."
Mother Ganga has no effect.
But the holy Mother Ganga, River Ganges has called me. So he was using. I thought, okay, like he's trying to embrace the religious establishment of Varanasi.
He's already, I mean, you have to, Varanasi.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Varanasi is one of the religious capitals of India. So, I mean, if you're going to go there, it's like you go to the Vatican, you're going to try and impress the Pope. I mean, you know what I'm saying? You have to like win over the people of that constituency. That's politics. You can't just expect him to go there and say, I don't believe in God, but elect me. That just won't happen. I mean, that's... He has to be practical about it. I don't think Modi is particularly religious, actually.
But he's associated with what is called Hindu nationalism, which we were talking about it. You have these huge movements who like advocate a very aggressive attitudes towards what they claim.
Oh, yeah.
You have this indigenous religions in India. Like Sikhism and Hinduism and maybe a little Buddhism, but the Muslims don't belong here and the Christians don't belong here and okay the Parsi nobody.
No, that's not what they say. This has to be a clear thing of what they say is, I don't support them for many reasons, but that what they basically say is they're not saying throw the Muslims out. They're not saying throw the Christians out. Yeah. they've got like a little messed up like variation on that, which is basically like, listen, if you live in India, you're going to have to embrace the Indian culture. As in, so basically what they're implying is it's okay to follow your God, but you are not allowed to, we basically Indian, they don't want Indian laws and cultures to bend, to be secular. But like in terms of like how the French basically banned the burqa.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They want to be like that.
Yeah, but it's not going to work because
yeah,
Muslim
won't.
Culture is part of Indian culture.
Yeah, yeah. Some I'm not saying it's going to work, but I mean that's the thought process behind it. But I mean, they're like it's happened for thousands of years. There are some aspects of like Muslim culture the Hindus will never accept, just like the Muslims will never accept some aspects of Hindu culture. You know, like, and vice versa, basically, like.
But still, they have to find a way to live together.
Yeah, they do. They have found a way to live together. Don't forget, like, India still, like, holds, I think, second or third highest number of Muslims in the world.
Yeah.
So, like, we...
Second number. I think Indonesia has the highest...
Indonesia has the highest percentage.
Yeah.
But it doesn't actually have more in physical number.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, like, say what you want, there are more Muslims who live in India than, like, maybe, like, most of, like, Arabic countries.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And, like, that still exists. So, we do live with them. But, like, this is just, like, a little right-wing, it's a right-wing party. But it's a big, but, I mean, I'm not so scared so much as the RSS as much as, like, and that they call the RSS.
So this is this Hindu nationalist organization.
It's very, which, you know, it's very similar to like how the brown shirts, I think, were in the Nazi. Like, do you know what I mean? The Nazi.
Yeah. Okay.
Like they were basically like camps where these people were like indoctrinated with this like this theories and stuff like that. So similar, and they have 1 million people.
Yeah.
Which is not a lot in India. I mean,
that's
not even like that's like a 1,000th.
So your idea of the BJP would be...
BJP is their moderate wing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
that's how they project.
Would rather, they would not... They would just use this sort of Hindu nationalistic ideology.
I think Modi in particular is doing that.
Yeah.
The rest of the BJP actually... See, the BJP came in power only once. For a full term. Has only come once.
What's the Prime Minister's name? Vajpayee?
He was Vajpayee.
And he was a member of the RSS.
He started as a member. I mean, I don't know, actually, personally. Yeah. I don't know if he was a member of the RSS.
Yeah.
But he was basically a symbol of a much more secular form of the BJP. Let's not muck around. Like, there are, like, a lot of people in the BJP who have been around for a long time, and they're not exactly nice people. Let's put it, like, lightly. They're, like, some absolute messed up people in the BJP, and... Like a former, like Advani, who was also part of the BJP.
Yeah.
Guy looks really decent and everything and sweet and all that, but he is definitely like quite psycho somewhere. But basically, getting back to the point, basically, I think Modi is basically leveraging Hinduism, but as in...
By leveraging?
As in he has to, if he has to win elections, he has to leverage Hinduism. Let's not mess around. India is still a majority Hindu country. Like... Yeah. So if you're going to win over... Indians are extreme religious people still. Like, Hindus are... We might be, like, really open about something, but we're still very religious in a very, like, pagan or superstitious way, you know? Like...
I found it very interesting when I was in Calcutta and I met this journalist and I met his colleague and I met a BJP member. So I asked these three men, so what about the significance of caste, for example? And then the BJP, like journalists, they said, "Oh no, you know, it doesn't play a big role, and we are living in big cities." And then the Indian Express journalist he objected and said, "I'm sorry, I don't agree with you. When it comes to marriage, you really are confronted with, you know, like inter-caste marriage might be a problem. Inter-religious marriages, it's like totally
caste taboo. Is a huge problem in India. It's not a joke, like." The BJP guy is just playing it down like ridiculous amounts. And I mean, as what I am sort of like upper middle class in India, so I don't suffer the brunt of being in a caste, like being in the caste system. But anybody middle and below will definitely suffer it. Just, I mean, if you even go to like a modern thing, like a dating website, you know, I'm looking for a woman, I'm looking for her to be this age, I want her to work like this. And then there's a section for caste. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
There's a drop-down list of like 50 different caste options.
Yeah.
And they want, and caste is still absolutely relevant when it comes to a lot of things like marriage, work. I mean, it's like unspoken of, like, but of course in cities,
what is unspoken of?
Like, as in the caste problem is like, it's not as, like, basically the way the government deals with a lot of caste issues is by giving them reservations in like colleges or like government jobs. But what happens a lot of times is like these people will apply for these reservations, and then from the bureau, from the government side, any, if there happens to be like a particularly like discriminating kind of person in charge, he'll just delay the reservations indefinitely.
So we are talking about scheduled castes.
Yes, exactly.
So
yeah.
Called scheduled castes, Dalits, the one like.
Dalits are like the biggest like castes. I like the lowest caste, like the big low caste, the big low caste.
So called untouchables.
At one point they were.
Yeah. So they have this.
But now they're no longer. I mean, like they're no longer as like weak or anything. The Dalits have, like Uttar Pradesh, for example, has, which is one of the biggest state in India, and has like over 100.
So Varanasi is in Uttar Pradesh.
Exactly, and that was the last leader who was a psychotic lady called Mayawati.
Yeah.
She was a Dalit. So basically, she won those elections on the basis of winning the Dalit vote. So the Dalits ruled one of the biggest, like, so I mean, I would say that these boundaries are breaking as time passes, especially in big cities. Like the BJP guys, right, in that aspect, that in big cities, at least the caste system is obviously going to break down because economics is always going to trump. At least my belief is that economics will always trump caste, like in the long run. Economics.
Okay.
Like money will trump, like, you know, a business relationship with someone when there's some profit involved. At the end of the day, I won't care what caste you are. I mean, that's what happens. So, like,
what about your experience? I mean, you coming. What about your parents? I mean, how did they marry? Do you know? I mean,
but they had absolutely no such. They didn't have any caste issues because they were like, well, my. Okay, so it's interesting. I have a well-traveled family, I can say. Like, my dad's side of the family, my grandmother from my dad's side of the family, she was part of the freedom struggle in India, actually.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So she used to, like, hang around with Gandhi and some other, like, people like that. And so she obviously had a much more, like, open mind. And, like, my granddad from my father's side was any a very moderate man. He didn't even bother thinking about these.
And your father was
my father was Navy. Yeah, so he just traveled. I mean, in his life, he passed away like 14 years ago, but like he basically traveled in his entire life. Like he visited Europe, almost every continent, and like obviously that completely opens up his, like, my, he doesn't even consider those things like at all. Mm-hmm. And same thing from my mother's side. Her father was he used to work in Africa. My mother was born in Africa. So they have a lot of, like, there's a lot of, like, I represent more of a very, like, global Indian, in sense that I've been, like, well-traveled. I've been exposed to many cultures since I was 3 or 4. So I'm a very pathetic example to, like, ask, what is your experience in India with these things? You know what I mean? I haven't experienced it because I haven't been brought up in that background.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, it really pisses me off, of course, like, just knowing it, just seeing it around, like, happens. And I mean, at least the circle I hang out in, we take great pains to ensure that we don't ever, like, ever even, like, unknowingly push that system on anybody. Even if there's, like, you know, because sometimes there's an apologetic system, like, somebody, if you've hired someone to, like, clean your house, a sweeper, or, like, someone who's going, that person themselves has an impression that he is beneath you, or he's lower than you, because he's been, like, culturally he's been, you know, like, forced into thinking like that. So I mean, at least a lot of people in my generation take great pains to ensure that that guy doesn't feel like, or at least we make sure that he doesn't feel like that, or like he feels like he's a part of regular society, or like he might be poorer than us, but that doesn't make him any, like, lesser than us. And I mean, that's the important thing. Money is, comes and goes, whatever, but like, like you said, dignity, basically. The person's dignity should not be, like, challenged.
Yeah, we had a discussion about honor and dignity. And as you pass me the microphone, I feel a little inhibited now, Uncle Andy. You don't want to... So when you have a question, you just take away the microphone.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because usually, I feel insecure now, you know, like that you just handed me the microphone. And usually, if Phil would be here, you would, like, really question you, like, all this. So what? who, and all these W questions, you know, like what, who, and so explain. Yeah.
I have one question about the caste system. Are there like Dalits from the low caste that are economically that have a lot of money?
Yeah, yeah, lots of Dalits. Like, and they, I mean, some of them, some experience issues, some don't. I mean, the Dalits have like advanced. Man, the Dalits have also like got enough like communities which are doing well, which are making. Like I said, there was the leader of the biggest state in India was a Dalit.
Yes, yes.
And like that's almost 180 million people to rule. Like and she's turned out to be psycho because she spent basically like 5 years making statues of herself all over the city and just like constructing gigantic like Greek kind like buildings and stuff. It's really
So when you meet people in India, do you know which caste they're from?
Like you
from
could. If you're educated in it, you can know someone's caste by their last name.
The last name, okay.
Yeah.
And maybe the way he talks, maybe less, he looks less.
Yeah, I mean, looks can sometimes give it away, but looks are less as name is like... I always say like the best way to change caste is perhaps to just change your name. And then it's much harder for someone to like... trace your caste or figure out what your caste is. Uh-huh. But like you said, when marriage comes, right, everything, like, then everybody wants to know the details. And then, I mean, there is still like ridiculous shit which happens, like in marriage even. Like, I'll tell you a very interesting like thing. There's something in like Hindu marriages called a mangalik. Mm-hmm. So a mangalik is basically, it's a bit of superstition. So like, a guy born on a certain date cannot marry a girl born in a certain time period, all right? Uh-huh. Even if they're in love and everything. Mm-hmm. But they can, of course, if they're in love, they will marry. But the way to defeat this mangalik problem is that we make the guy marry a tree first.
A tree?
A tree, yeah. Yes. So the guy marries the tree, then divorces the tree. And then he can marry his wife. Because the tree has absorbed all the like...
That's interesting. You can marry a tree.
You can marry anything in India, unfortunately.
You can marry... Really? Wow.
Literally anything in India, except like another man if you're a man right now.
So it's easier to marry a tree or a stone?
Yeah, absolutely. You can marry a dog, you can marry a tree, you can marry anything. You can't marry another man yet. It'll change. Ironically, like, even though the people of India are against... A lot of people in India, they don't understand gay marriage or gay thinking or like that... like. Even though it's been there in our culture forever, like the interesting thing is that...
So maybe the truth is you can marry a tree as long as the tree has a different sex than you.
The sexy tree.
You know that the ginkgo tree has two sexes, so then you must be sure it has the right sex.
Your girlfriend is... she is a journalist, right? Yeah. So are you thinking about marriage?
No, I'm not.
No. Okay. No. And it's, so I mean, yeah.
A delicate topic?
It's absolutely.
But you know, it's a delicate topic. Yeah, but I mean, come on, he can say he doesn't want to.
He cannot say he doesn't want to marry.
Yeah, I
can't. You can.
What if she hears this? What am I going to do when I go back? Like, hi. When I'm like not broke. It's probably a better time to be married.
Okay. But you know what you could do now? You can like deliver a message to Bharat, India. You can deliver a message to your to your friends in India.
No, I refuse to.
You don't want to... I mean, they can listen to it.
No, I don't want to deliver any message to them.
You don't want
to...
Okay.
They basically just call me with all the requests. Okay, we want this, we want that. Get it anyway. Yeah.
Okay, let's listen to another song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think enough of politics.
Which one?
Just one last question. So what's going to be the outcome? So what do you predict? The next 5 years in India?
Very good question. Well, it depends. There are two possible outcomes right now in my mind. Either Modi will win outright or...
Over 50%. That's it. Okay.
More than 50%. Or... Kejriwal will form... I don't see the Aam Aadmi Party winning, but they may cause hung elections, which is like there's no majority is able to form, which is also a very bad way for it to end, because that just means more frozen policies.
Okay.
Or basically the Modi government still manages to win, but the government is just barely a majority.
Okay.
So that'll keep it quite intact. I don't know, man. Like, mm-hmm. the next 5 years in India are like a mystery to everybody because nobody really understands this Modi character. Like, as much as we might claim to do, nobody really understands, like, what he intends to do. Like, we literally, there's a lot of, like, there's no clear-cut economic policy. Everyone knows that he's a pure-out capitalist, as in, everyone's afraid he's just going to sell everything to the companies.
I'm sorry, he's going
to... He's just going to sell out to the companies, basically. Okay. That's what he's... That's one primary fear a lot of people have, which is the resource and all that shit will go to. Yeah.
Okay, before I choose another song, before we find another song, that's Lifafa, is that the
yeah.
name of your band?
Yeah, no, this is my individual. This is my the solo project.
Okay, so you called your project Lifafa. What does it mean?
It means envelope.
Oh.
In Urdu, nice. Yeah.
So something from the new album, maybe?
Yeah, you can play Iradu. Oh, this is the old album.
Which one?
This is the old album, actually.
Okay, so this is the new one.
Yeah, this one's the new one. You can play the last one.
It's like so professional.
Only four. Why?
Well, because we have these like really like, you know, like big radio stations, like we play music in between the interviews and like unheard of, you know.
So you have only four tracks?
It's an EP right now, yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is called Iradon?
Iradon, yeah. Which means my intentions.
My intentions.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
I'm delighted. I mean, really, that's really cool. I don't feel much more better. I wasn't very. No. I'm just telling you. I'm in such a good mood now. I felt so hung over the whole afternoon. I'm just like sleeping. Now you're here. There you go. Uncle Andy is like really, it's like, he was one of my first editors. It's always very comical when you have him describing how he experienced me for the first time. That's very funny. And then there was this other guy, Philip, and he asked the two of us and another female colleague, you know, if we want to do this podcast. So he's like, actually, Andreas is like a really serious political journalist who's now trying to do some American culture. And he gets like totally frustrated by all these bitchy female colleagues.
Yes, I mean, I love the female colleagues. Those bitchy female colleagues. I've never experienced that life in my life, the colleagues or like office life. I've never actually worked a job in my life. I've been in freelance since I was 15, I think, or 14. Now.
Hey, I do have some avant-garde. Almost the same with me. Almost. Yeah, tell us about this office life. Yes, something we really don't know about.
Like what?
The politics.
You have to go to meetings all the time.
Yeah, it's, yes.
Sometimes I have meetings.
6 to 7 meetings a day.
It's cast the program.
I think meetings are just supposed to convince people that you're doing something.
What?
I think meetings just convince people that they're going to do something. I don't know. But I think it's more like a, come on guys, let's do this. I don't know, I don't find meetings productive. Because every time I have a meeting with people, like, anyway, what happens in my meeting is obviously really unproductive because everybody gets stoned. And then, of course, everyone's just talking shit.
Yeah, that's true. Everybody's talking shit, yeah.
And then, like, after 2 hours, nobody does anything.
In Deutschland, nobody gets strong. When I was
the boss, I would have meetings, like, standing, you know, between the PTA and the door and the gangway.
Yeah.
Without being in the meeting room or anything. Just standing. 5 minutes.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, official. I'm not the first one to have this idea. Many companies do it, I guess.
Yeah.
Instead of time. Mm. You have the same results.
Maybe it's to say, okay, this is what we have to
exactly,
do.
Exactly.
Who does what?
You don't need to sit there in like big chairs and just like watch a projector.
And it's good in the corridors. It would work perfectly in the
space. Yeah. You don't need all these meeting rooms.
And you have this kitchen, you know, and I can sit there and just,
SoundCloud.
Okay, so the name is Fafa?
Yeah.
Yes.
I've got a website coming up. I'm just waiting for the American porn industry to... I'm not
What's
kidding.
The connection with the American porn industry?
basically the domain which I bought is lifafa.xxx.
Yeah.
So if you buy a .xxx domain, you have to apply for a membership as part of the porn industry.
Because xxx is from the porn industry.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
For the porn industry. So like if you have to basically apply and say that you're not going to have any underage porn and like all sorts of things.
So I, xxx from dick size or what? That's why? You know.
No, sex. Like sex.
Sex.
You <don't. laughs> okay, so
the piece we just
a big Indian porn producer who's trying to use uses music as a cover up. So,
so who was the singer on the track we just heard?
Oh, me,
you?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Cool.
When did you start singing? As a boy,
I started singing when I was like 22, actually.
Oh, okay.
So 5 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, apparently I didn't know. I didn't know I could sing until then. Then I got a little more liberated at 22. It was a little marijuana.
Oh, okay. So did you have some kind of education, or did you learn it like that?
I didn't really have an education, but you could say that like we had like the Hindu version of gospel singing.
Oh, okay.
So as a child, like my mother was quite like religious when I was younger, and basically there's like gospel singing in Hinduism, it's called bhajans.
Mm.
They're called bhajans, which are like basically devotional songs.
Mm.
So basically I used to go to something called Bal Vikas as a child, which is basically it's kind of like an indoctrination for like children also into Hinduism.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very positive. Like it's very like, this is, you should treat your elders with respect, treat strangers with respect, like treat animals, all the, basically very like nice stuff. And basically
so mother Vivekananda version,
exactly. It's pure, exactly. It's extremely like positive, like how to, like, and I mean I think it's been excellent to me in my life, like all those.
What's it called again?
It's called Bal Vikas, which means Vikas. The Vikas means progress and Bal means children, so
okay.
Progressive children. I don't know, like. And basically at the end of each session we would sing bhajans, so that's where I used to sing, like they would make me sing them.
So is
could you sing one and use this as a harmonium? Could you just give
an yes, example? But you have to hold the microphone.
Yeah, I'm holding the microphone.
Oh man, okay.
Und halte sie mal ein bisschen näher ran, ne? Yeah. Das ist verständlich, weil dein Mikrofon ist ganz schön schlapp schon. Da muss man eben mit Batterie wechseln.
Wie bitte, Batterie wechseln? Mhm. Was sind Batterien?
Diese weißt schon.
Oh, one sec. It's not making any sounds anymore.
Oh, maybe.
Let's see. Well, looks like this thing has stopped working.
But you just played with this.
Yeah, yeah. No, I must. I'm just probably doing something stupid.
What happened?
Maybe there's something there.
No.
It's not even connected. Let's see.
Okay, so we have this Indian musician who has been ripped off by Berlin.
I'm going back to Berlin.
Oh, well, how much did you pay for the keyboard? 30 euros.
Probably overcharged you. You know, we as locals, we paid like only half the price.
What kind of shop was that?
Wait till he comes to India. Charge him 10 times.
What kind of shop was that?
It's like a little electronic store, like 15 minutes from here.
Okay. Really?
It's so cool. I'm going there tomorrow because we have some cool stuff I'm asking.
Okay. So is it working now? No, huh?
No, actually. I'm kind of curious what happened.
It's working.
Yeah, but why wasn't it working before? That's a bigger question. Yeah.
Eh?
What happens?
Stable? Eh? There's a Wackelkontakt.
This is not what I've heard of German engineering.
I'm not sure. This is German.
This is Japanese.
This is Japanese.
But he fixed it.
Yeah, I'm trying to try to fix it. Yeah. It's gonna be like, oh, that's too bad, man. I'm so disappointed.
I think it's a power issue, actually. Hey, you have batteries by any chance?
Batteries? No, I'm afraid not. What kind of batteries would go in there? It's like, no. Oh, no, forget it. I don't have these huge batteries.
Oh, shit, I knew this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you learned to sing in a religious context?
Yeah.
Is religion still a part of your life?
Absolutely not.
No? Why not? What's the problem? Too many gods in Hinduism, or?
It's just really stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, there's actually maybe like, it's just this, it's a superstitious, like, there's too many superstitions, like ridiculous little things you have to do, and I'm too lazy to do them, like.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I find the whole thing really fascinating. Like, I love visiting some temples just as like a, like observer of what's going on, like what people do, or like, and you know, when you have these gigantic bonfires and like a strange, the ceremonial part, I don't know, I'm just not religious. I'm too busy, like, in my mind to like spend any single brain cell in my head towards like some, maybe some god.
And is the let's say the religious language, is there still Sanskrit language?
No, it was it's Hindi.
It's Hindi.
Yeah, I mean, I learned it in Hindi. Actually the religious language is Sanskrit, in terms of all the scriptures are written in Sanskrit. But like Hindi, everything's been translated into Hindi. And
is,
like,
okay. Yeah. Is it similar to Hindi, or is it very different?
Sanskrit is basically a more refined, a more like scholarly Hindi. You know,
okay.
Hindi is the more popular, like the man's, the common language now, common man's language version of Sanskrit. Like, that's basically it.
So how did you end up where you are now? So have you also attended like St. Xavier's, which is like this great college of the arts in Bombay, like Sanaya, your funerary colleague?
I used to actually go.
Actually, I was
engineer. You went to MTI, whatever.
No. Actually, I did try to attend some sort of an art college in Delhi, in Gurgaon, actually.
Yeah.
Which is, it's probably the worst college in the world for any sort of, for anything. I'm not kidding. The thing is, you Germans have absolutely no clue about some of the things which happen in India. Like, how shocking they would be to you. Like I just can't dictate it. Anyway, so I only went there for like a few months. And in the meantime, basically, I managed to get like a semi-scholarship to like this college in San Francisco, basically.
All right.
And
so how did you manage to get the scholarship?
Oh, I made like, throughout my like, youth, basically between 14 and 18, I just used to make a multitude of things. So like, when I was 14, I became a 15, I became a logo designer.
Right.
So that's how I started. Like, I mean, basically because the place I lived in India, I was like, I had no friends or whatever. It's a sad story. But point is, I basically spent much more time on the computer. So I ended up...
Nobody wanted to be your friend?
No, where I lived, actually, the very few people who could be friends. I lived in like a retirement colony. And there's no public transportation in Gurgaon until very recently. Even, you know, so like, unless you had a car, you literally couldn't go anywhere. But basically, I mean, I guess.
So you applied, you were...
Yeah,
so
I basically, by the time I applied...
Course, like art or...
I actually, by the time I applied, I was applying for 3D animation. Because I was sort of interested in it. And then when I got there, San Francisco, I changed my mind to filmmaking. Because I found... Actually, to be honest, I just went to the 3D animation section and just realized that they're very... It felt like a very dull atmosphere. Like, everyone's going to be sitting in front of the computer all the time. There are no girls... no girls want to do 3D animation. They just don't, you know. And filmmaking definitely seemed, and I never thought about it until that point, until this moment in San Francisco. I'd never considered filmmaking my entire life, and for some reason it seems to work. It seemed to work, and I ended up taking it up, and I studied a bunch of shit. Some of it was filmmaking, and some of it was acting classes. Some of them were like history classes about the 70s in New York. So, you know, like things were basically just opening my mind up like rapidly. So like by the time I came back to India, which was in like 2009, I was a completely different person in terms of what I wanted to do. And I basically just came back and became a musician.
So how do you make a living? How can you live by electronic music and producing and DJing? Do you have to sell your soul to Bollywood?
No, I don't. I haven't had to sell my soul to anything yet. Okay. But I mean, I've basically, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've lived off the band which I make.
Okay.
Excuse me, the band which I play in, and like our band did decently well, so we were able to like play enough shows and keep ourselves paid, because India is still a cheap place to stay, you know, relatively, if you don't want much, and stuff like that. And I still did logo design on the side, which is something I still enjoy doing. I mean, by logo design, I mean strictly identity, like a logo mark or something, you know what I mean?
Okay. Yes. What about your mother? Is she happy? Or would she have rather liked you to turn
No, my
mom's, lawyer,
my mother's been extremely supportive for anything. She's hyper excited that I became a musician, actually. She did not want like another whatever guy in the family. I mean, the whole family eventually like has finally warmed up to the idea of me being some... You know, to Indians, it's like... They don't. The idea of success has to do with either the guy makes money or he gets called abroad for some reason.
Okay.
So you know what I mean? Yeah. So like at least they warmed up to the idea when they saw that I'm doing decently well. I'm like, I'm not
being called up. You get invited to Berlin.
Yeah, exactly. Things like that. So it's at least to them it seems like okay, he's not being like an idiotic, like wasting his time. I mean, there's a lot of practical sense to it. Being a musician in India is still one of the worst ideas you can have in this world. Like, because India's as it is like one of the most terrible places to be an artist in general. I mean, like it's exceptionally bad. Like maybe the worst country in the world at being for artists, because the people have absolutely don't give a shit about art at all. The general population has absolutely no interest in art in any way.
Yeah, man, and it's not... Yeah.
Talking about art in India, what about there is an typical Indian classical music, the old classical Indian music.
That's extremely elitist, like...
Yes, but people, but musicians who play this, they are very famous.
They're brilliant. Yeah, of course. But, like, again, these are, like, the musicians, A, they're government-funded.
Yeah.
Okay. And B, like I said, you know, if they play a show in India, maybe, like, a certain number will come up. Maybe they'll go play a show in, like, America, and maybe 100 times many people will come to watch them and appreciate them. You know, it's, I mean, it's the same, like if, but yeah, in India, basically there's, it's a very like this idea of art being some sort of a career is like alien.
Yes.
Like people don't even consider that, like they never can see in India. It's very interesting. Mm. No one cares who's making the music.
Mm, okay.
They'll remember the actor who lip synced.
Oh, wow.
to the song. You know what I mean? This is like, this is how it works. So like, and painters are even worse than musicians in India, like worse off, like. Painters have even less value in India. Like nobody even like considers that some sort of a profession. Mm-hmm. Like the general population absolutely does not care. It doesn't care. It's almost India's anti-art, which is almost pretty cool. Like,
but doesn't the Bollywood industry employ a lot of artists?
Yeah, I mean, what do you mean by artists, right?
As a painter, you can paint.
Yeah, if you see a lot of Bollywood films, you'll realize that there's very little like. There are few filmmakers who are now actually starting to make some exceptional... Mm. Cinema is extremely important in India, but it's never been important because it's an art form. It's been important because of the actors or the celebrities.
Yes, yes.
So it's never been about like, wow, like what direction. Mm. It's always been about the music. Mm. Again, but I told you the context of the music is so different in India. People care, people love music in India, but they don't care about the musician or the artist himself.
Yes,
so they won't make like... They'll know the singer and they might know... If the singer becomes really famous, they'll know the singer. Otherwise, they'll only remember the actor who lip-synced. And they'll never know like who made the music most of the time. Mm-hmm. Which is very interesting. The composer has zero value there. So like all these... When you add all these things... Right now is the point the country's changing rapidly. Like it's much better for me than it was for anybody like 10 years ago even.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
And in the next 10 years, whoever's going to like play in the next generation is going to have a much better time than I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so on. But like... In general, that, until that real, that the view towards art, which Indians have in general, doesn't change.
So do you have a different option when you find out when you get 30 or 35 and you want to marry that you don't have enough income? Is there do you have a different option, plan B?
I mean, I don't have a plan B.
Okay.
Some people, most people do. Most people, a lot of musicians I know, for example, some have set up restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some set up cafes and some like... Because in India, being a band is not—it's not a lifelong thing. It's very like 99.99999% of the time, you're going to turn 30, and your band's not going to be doing shit.
Yes.
And I mean, like, it's possible I'll also end up being one of them. But like, at least the decision I've made in my life is that I don't want to be one of them. So I'm definitely going to work towards at least create. Basically, I'm not trying to get rich or like super famous of my music, but I want to ensure that I can live the life I want to live of my music. Like, I shouldn't have to do something else to maintain my, like, to make sure I can eat or I can travel and stuff like that. So I don't have like some crazy lofty goals also, but no, I don't have plan B basically. I don't have any backup plans. I think if you have backup plans, you've pretty much given up already.
You might be right.
Yeah, I mean.
Do you have a plan B, Cindy?
No, my plan B is to live to live up my pension guests. And no, I'm not supposed to tell about it because it's not legal. No, it's not, is it? Yeah, anyway, and to start a pension, that would be like my plan B.
What is illegal is to turn your flat into a tourist apartment, okay. Which is only for tourists because this is made for it's a, for social reasons.
What does that mean, a tourist apartment, like couch surfing or what?
Like if you rent this out for tourists and you don't live here anymore and you rent it out for tourists, that's not allowed. You need a license for that.
Yeah.
But if you have guests here in the room, it's not illegal.
Yeah.
Yes. You just have to pay tax for it, but you would do that.
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah. No, and my plan B would be like to start a pension. That would be like so cool. I mean, and my plan B would be to find an old house somewhere in India and start like a pension. That would be
like in the mountains. Like literally that place in the mountains, I think you could live off for like a euro a day. Less than a euro a day. Yeah. You know, so I mean, if you think about it, you make like, if you just go with a couple of €1,000, you could end up living like a couple of years there and be like completely relaxed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little extreme, the number I'm giving, but it's possible to live pretty comfortably in the like parts of India with like a high standard of living also. Especially like, it's interesting, some parts of India which have become really popular, like Himachal Pradesh, where like all the drugs and I mean, where all the hashish and stuff is like found. Whatever, a lot of Israelis and Russians love that place, and like Italians. Oh yeah, and they've set up communities there. You know, like you'll be amazed at like this. All right, the pizza you get in Delhi is absolute rubbish, and you drive 200 kilometers north, you'll go up to these mountains. All right, and you'll end up at this little shack of a restaurant, and they'll be making wood fire pizzas in there. And this dude who is absolutely the opposite of someone who looks Italian will come out with an absolutely incredible pizza and like serve it. Because he's been taught by all these like Italians and stuff to like, because they obviously want their food, they want their pasta, they want their whatever.
Yeah.
All the things the Italians eat. And so it's really, it's a crazy place. Plus they're stoned all the time, so they get munchies and they want to make sure like they've got I mean, there's like simple economics of like drugs, you know, like you sell drugs in the same place and then people get hungry and they want to eat, so the restaurants there work because of that. Like, this is the
intended business. That would be, I would like to do that. Yeah, that would be okay, cool. Now, I'm amazed by Surya Khan's appetite. You keep on telling me that how much you like to eat here. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I just ate another burger before I got here. Yeah.
Is it working now?
Yeah,
I mean maybe we can.
No, it's not again.
We can. No, it's not again.
So what do you eat when you're here in Europe?
I'm pretty open. Like, I completely avoid Indian food, of course.
Because sometimes I know Indian restaurants where sometimes Indian tourists or guests go because they want to eat some of their kind. But I think it's very different. No. From what you get in India,
I'm sure it is.
And they usually keep saying, but we want it all spicy, all of it. And
I'm not a big spicy guy anyway.
And the waiter say, well, it's not. It's just not spicy. We could put you the spices aside. So what we get as spicy here is not spicy at all.
No, not at all. Not by Indian standards, yeah. But I mean, I generally, okay, so like, for example, in this, in Germany though, I enjoy like the cold meat. I enjoy cold food. I love like the sand. I love bread. So like I'm insanely in love with bread. So I like, I just eat as many sandwiches as I sandwiches. I'm kind of sick of the doner kebabs. I had a couple and like, they're okay. I know people lived by them, but like I got over them. I'm more actually in like, I love like the so-called German breakfast. I really like that a lot, which is like the bread, the sliced hams, the sliced meat, little cheese, like some vegetables and put some butter and eat that. I'm loving that. Like,
and beef is not a problem for you?
Not for me, no. No religion. Or denying myself anything. Yeah. Yeah. Well, plus, I'm not going to come to like Germany and not eat beef. Lord. That's just.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Any more questions?
No, another song we play.
Another song, and then we have. Before we really end, I found it so interesting. But let me refer to what we were talking about yesterday night. You were so surprised by the way strangers address each other. You remember what
I was telling you that there's a sense of formality in Europe is what I was telling you. It doesn't exist in India. Like, Like, just the way of greeting each other, interacting. Maybe, but I thought about that a lot more, and I realized that once people are extremely, like, friendly here, but they're definitely not that first, like, the first conversation is far colder than maybe there.
Yeah.
But, like, the people here are definitely... I mean, I trust the people a lot here, like, at least in Germany, like, I've noticed, like even the subway systems or, like, the metro systems, they don't have any, like, security or, like... You know what I mean? Anyone can get on the... I mean, I do that sometimes. Just get on the train and leave. And there's no checking. So that there's
obviously... Well, you can, but they're, what do you call it, secret controllers. And
yeah,
they
yeah.
just take out their ID and then you are screwed.
No, I know. But in general, it's a very trusting society. Like, that's what my basic thing is. Like, they're quite a trusting society. This is different from what I've experienced in other, like, the other cities in Europe last time, at least. Like. And in general, I find the Germans, against my like natural impression, which is I thought they'd be much colder. Or, you know what I mean? This is like the stereotype.
Definitely colder. And I thought...
But they aren't.
I like you. Yeah, but I agree with you. And I like your observation about public space and private space. Like when you said, like in India, when you move outside, when you move towards an open space, into the public space, you have no more private space, basically.
Absolutely.
Whereas here... You were talking about bubbles, right?
Yeah, everyone's like, walking on little bubbles.
Yeah. So everybody is like in its mother. And you have to... Surya Khan was extremely surprised when he asked me, so how would you address a stranger? And I said, you would use this term, entschuldigen Sie bitte, or entschuldige mal, or something like this. You would excuse yourself, you know? And you were totally surprised by that.
I understood, but I didn't find it like a good. I mean, it seems almost hilarious to like apologize for your existence. You know, like
yeah.
I mean, like I guess we don't have that sense. We don't. Maybe we're just more forward. Like it's probably just we're more exposed to people all the time. Also in India, in general, you know, like there'll rarely be a time when I can walk
so
out.
Makes no sense to apologize to everybody you meet because you would be apologizing.
Absolutely,
you know, everybody. Well, that's something to think about. It's true. There's no you don't. If you trust in the world and in the existence, you don't have to apologize for yourself, for the way you are.
Yeah.
No.
Well. So do you want to say something last word for the guest?
No, the guest has the last word.
The guest. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
The guest. Last word for the guest.
Yes. And before you.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go back and get this keyboard exchanged.
Yeah.
That's my last word.
So. From the old album, maybe, yes?
Yeah.
Now one song? Los Gatos? No.
Let's see. You can play something interesting. You can play Whistling or you can play College.
College?
That's Whistling. A waste. Or College, one of them, I think. There's the more ambient songs.
College?
Both, actually. Whistling is like a little strange. I don't know.
Where is College?
The last one, perhaps. Or maybe it's called Deviant, sorry.
Deviant.
Completely forgot the name.
So did we mention that?
Or try Whistling, actually.
Do
I think Whistling.
Do we still have a text for the podcast, Andy?
What?
Do we still have a text for the podcast? So we can give the name of the homepage and so on?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Shit.
Ah, that's the...
Sehr schön. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, yeah.
I'm really satisfied. Substantial and atmospherical. And music.
Yeah.
Really.
Complete.
Sure.
Cool.
I'm so annoyed. I was so excited.
Yeah, no, I mean, the video, you can take it back.
Yeah, no, I will take it back. But I mean, I don't want to take it back. I want it to work.
Yeah. I need you to get some new cigarettes. Oh. I didn't finish my Texas at all. I have to do it tonight or something. It's like.
It's pretty.
You know so little about the other. It's unbelievable. That's why I always like, you know, it's one of my, okay, like I have two aims when I travel to a foreign country. So one you can figure, one is like going into a private place to see how people live. That's why it was so great that we could come. What's your friend's name again?
Samrat.
Huh? Samrat, yeah. That he invited us to come over, because I mean that really was a, and so this is. That's really like at the core. So how long were you in San Francisco?
3 years.
3 years. Yeah. But 3 years is a good time.
It was I couldn't finish college. I had to like leave because I didn't have money.
It was like only a half scholarship. Or?
Oh, I did very. No, they gave me a good scholarship for the fourth year. They cut my scholarship because the law changed, actually. But I was all right. I think my time had ended there. I had a lot of fun there. Very interesting thing, I'll tell you, I used to do. The way I got to my second year of college is I used to edit gay porn.
What?
I used to edit gay porn.
You used to edit gay porn?
Yeah. I was
kidding.
Yeah, yeah. So I would, like, every weekend in 2007... I would basically travel to Sacramento by train, which was the capital of California.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I would basically go there and I would go into this crazy mansion.